Look, there's a book.
Hi, everybody. I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic. Cameron, thank you for that kind introduction. Thank you for being a great host and picking us up on time and having our room key and everything. You're just the best host we've ever had today. And I really appreciate that. And I want to thank my wonderful wife, Eileen, for accompanying me to this outstanding event. This is kind of a homecoming. It feels that way, doesn't it? Stateline, we were deprived of this last year. I'm so grateful to be back here and be in a room with so many people I know and I love, and you've influenced me, you've carried me, you've been my examples. I'm better when I'm with you. And I want to thank America for giving an outstanding talk and carrying the message to all of us. You know, I'm just... You know, full disclosure, honesty, you know, we just got back to face-to-face meetings where I live in Bellingham, Washington in August, and I'm a little weird still, you know what I mean? It's like I'm trying to keep it together, but I'm seeing people. I'm like that little kid, you know, at the circus, like, oh, clowns, you know, I'm just seeing friends, and I just want to run around, and I'm trying to be cool, like, hey, good to see you. But the truth is, there was a long extended period of time where I had too much time with myself. And I count on AA. I've become spoiled over the years. Just that day in, day out AA membership and what that entails. This non-negotiability that we develop about our approach to recovery, where you know what night it is and you're going there at this time and you get there and those people are going to be there and they're going to read that and then that guy's going to share that same thing again. And it's... And you think that makes you crazy until it's taken away from you. And then you're like, God, I'd love to hear that boring story just one more time. And so it's wonderful to be here. I'm excited to be here. My sobriety date, September 16th, 1991, just celebrated 30 years of sobriety. Very excited about that. Which means I'm an example that AA works. That you can take a low bottom, guy with no skills, hope to die alcoholic, somebody that anyone with a glancing familiarity with alcoholism would have looked at the week before I came to AA and went, that guy over there, he's gonna die. And I agree, I would have agreed with you. I'm waiting for the end when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had quit fighting the drink years earlier. Because I had been battling my alcoholism for 5 or 6 years, giving it everything I had, and I always end up drunk. And if there's one more attempt and one more failure, maybe what will happen to you is what happened to me. I lost the will to do battle with King Alcohol. And I just surrendered to the idea I was going to die drunk. So I didn't come to AA to get sober. Now, I know many of you had that intention, and you're more moral than I am, but I knew I wasn't going to get sober in a million years. And this is the good news about AA, and always will be. Alcoholics Anonymous does not work because of the alcoholic. It works in spite of the alcoholic. So in spite, and that's good news for me, because what do I bring to the game of recovery, right? Old ideas, belly full of fear, deep-seated resentment. I hate everyone that's doing better than me, and everyone's doing better than me, right? Pitiful, incomprehensible, the immoralization, the wreckage of my past. There's not a lot of raw material to work with. You know, I hear people say all the time, AA saved my life. It didn't save my life. What AA did was it kicked the feet out of my old life and said, we're done. That one's over. You see, it promises me, and it uses the word in the big book, that we're reborn. You see, I get a whole nother shot at this thing called life. In fact, because I'm an alcoholic, I've had the wonderful experience of having two separate experiences with the game of life. I've lived the life of the drunkard, and we all know about that and everything it intends. But I've lived the life of the sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they are so different, so separate. They don't resemble each other at all. You can set them on opposite sides of the room. And I'm so grateful for that because I never want to close the door on my past. And it's not a long way, 30 years, to look back. I don't have to clear my eyes and get binoculars. It's right in front of my face. I remember what it was like to wake up. And it's in the room with me every day. That thought, please God, not tonight, because I'm dying. I can't do this another minute. Yet I'm drunk that night. I know everything there is to know about powerlessness, and I never want to forget when I lost my soul. I never want to forget when I lost the power of choice where drink was concerned. I never want to underestimate the miracle I'm swimming in the middle of. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not as grateful as I should be. And what is my indication of that? Well, my level of complaining, mostly. But thank God I'm here with you, my people, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, world-class complainers. Oh, my God. If there was an Olympic sport for alcoholics, it would be complaining, and we'd all have gold medals. I mean, we just, oh. But they drag us in here on meat hooks, you know what I mean? More dead than alive, and 2 weeks later, we're bitching about the coffee. You know, it's just who we are. And we don't have to have success to judge people. We judge people at the bottom of our existence. We lay in the gutter and watch people walk by and say, "Huh, where'd you get those ugly shoes?" You know, just... This is who came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I get to talk a little bit about membership and sponsorship and home group. And I'm excited to do that. When I say I'm a product of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm a product of what men and women did, for some of them, decades, before I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked into a meeting hall, and there was tables set up, there was coffee brewed, there were big books on the table, and there are men and women there, ready, on watch. And I took advantage of all of it. Because that's what I was supposed to do. That's why they set it up for me. They've been waiting for me, seemingly, their whole life. But I'm not new anymore, and I have a greater understanding and a deeper appreciation for what these men and women did. These good men and women were willing to be inconvenienced for this alcoholic that they had never even met. But they were convinced I was coming. And so because it was a home group, they had a plan in place to absorb the suffering alcoholic when he walked in the door. They didn't have to scramble. They didn't have to talk. They did it like they did it every day. And I found out there's a reason for that. They did it every day. In A Vision for You, it says, being wrecked in the same vessel, being united under the same God, with hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others. The things that signify so much to some people mean little to them. You see, they had been wrecked in the same vessel. They had found this power greater than themselves. They were united in their common experience. They had their hearts and their minds attuned to the next suffering alcoholic that walked in the door. And because of this grand mission that they had been given, this divine appointment as alcoholics, being tasked with being there to reach into the abyss and grab the hand of the next suffering alcoholic, the things that mattered a lot to other people didn't mean a lot to them. Now, these are people that had purposeful lives. They had careers. They were homeowners. They had cars. I mean, they were show-offs, to be honest with you, you know. Because when you're new in AA and you're a low-bottom drunk, everybody's a show-off. I mean, you guys had stuff I couldn't imagine ever having, like valid driver's licenses. And if, you know, there's an address on the license, and if you go there, you actually live there. And that's... And you were ready for me when I walked in. And I want to be very clear that if there wasn't a home group and there wasn't the things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous in place, you'd have a different speaker this evening. I am absolutely convinced of that. You see, if I'm going to have anything to do with the solution, I'm a dead man. Because my scorecard reads zero, my tank's on empty, I can't get my eyes off of my shoes. But luckily, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous where they understood that about new people. You got to understand, a week before I came to AA, I had stolen a family member's car. I was on a 3-day drunk, and I'm in this dirtbag motel in the San Fernando Valley, and I heard some voices next door, and I didn't realize I was in a crack motel. And I want to be very clear, I don't smoke crack. But I went over and knocked on the door and hung out with these crackheads because I was lonely. And they were up. Now, you can't see that when I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have to know that somebody just came from a life-threatening situation when they walk into AA. See, nobody gets here on a winning streak. Nobody gets here because, well, my life's pretty good. I'm just drinking too much Chardonnay. Maybe I'll check out AA. That doesn't happen. We're the last house on the block. There's no referrals from AA. Nobody says, well, I got to tell you, if you're a mess up, go see these people. No, this is it. If you've made it to AA, there's nowhere else to go from here. It's the good news and the bad news. You're at the end of the line. Congratulations. I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous September 16th, 1991, and I don't look that night the way I look this evening. I got hair down the middle of my back, and it's filthy. I've lost the ability to speak the King's English. I communicate in a series of hand gestures, grunts, and clicks. I'm wearing my sunglasses at night. I got my tough guy radar out. I got my arms folded tight around me, and I'm rocking back and forth in the Simi Valley Alano Club, surveying the room, daring you to come talk to me. And every molecule in my body is screaming simultaneously, let's get a drink, let's get a drink, let's get a drink. And my alcoholism, which the big book tells me resides mainly in my mind, is pointing out how I'm not like you. You're clean and you know each other and you're happy and I'm filthy and I smell and I know it and I don't like anyone and I don't want to be here. And why did I think quitting drinking was a good idea? And I'm going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm going to go get drunk. Not because AA doesn't work. Not because God doesn't exist. Not because the steps aren't a miracle. Because I've lost the power of choice where drink is concerned. I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to leave and get drunk, and it's going to cost me everything. It's the most important moment of my life, but I caught a break, because in that room that night were two good men from Alcoholics Anonymous named Lou and Mark. And although it's the most important moment of my life for Lou and Mark, it was, what, Tuesday. And these guys were where they were every Tuesday night, right? Drinking AA coffee, telling AA war stories. More importantly, eyes trained on the room, eyes trained on the door, looking for men to 12-step, right? And they see this vision for you, and the story that they tell goes like this. They saw me, and Lou looked at Mark and went, whoa. And Mark looked at Lou and went, yeah. And then they took, I think, it was the most important action we'll ever take in a meeting setting of Alcoholics Anonymous. These two good men walked 30 feet across the clubhouse to cordially welcome a man to Alcoholics Anonymous who was dying from the disease of alcoholism. They did it in the kind, unassuming manner that we're taught to do it. Hi, I'm Lou. This is Mark. We don't think we've met you. Why don't you come sit with us? That stuff changes lives. And the reason I think it's so important, 30 feet for Lou and Mark, for me, it's a million miles. Don't you know where I've been? Don't you know what I've done? Don't you know who I've hurt? Don't you understand? I can't get my eyes off my shoes. I'm standing there in my wardrobe at the low point of my existence, and I hear people say things in Alcoholics Anonymous to new people that make me crazy. Go work the room. Go shake hands. Go introduce yourself. Do you think I'm in any ability to ask for help? I'm convinced I'm going to die. No, you're going to have to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And these men understood alcoholism. And they sat me down, and Lou continued to stand, and Mark sat with me, and Lou clapped me right in the middle of the back, and he said, Don, this is Mark. He'll be your sponsor. And he walked away. And in that moment, that precise moment, my life changed. Now, if you had grabbed me right after that and said, you just had the most life-changing experience of your existence, I would have said, what happened? I missed it, you know. But here's what happened. I got an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous as a sponsor, which means what? I'll be active if I'm willing to have it. Because he's active, he has a home group, which means what? I guess I got a home group if I'm willing to have it. Because he has a home group and he's an active member, he has commitments in that group, little tethers, he called them, that tie him to the program, which means what? I'll have these tethers if I'm willing to have it. He's got 1,000 friends. He knows all of you, which means I'm going to have 1,000 friends. I didn't know that when you get a sponsor in AA, you inherit all their friends. And I want to be clear, though, when you're new, this does not feel like an asset. what it feels like is there's a lot of strangers up in your business. Why am I so fascinating? Why do you want to know how I'm doing? Why are you telling me there's going to be a miracle? You're expecting a miracle. You should be expecting a head wound. Back off. You know, I just came from the streets. I'm a street guy. And I'm in your nice, clean, tidy Alcoholics Anonymous trying to scare you with my best tough guy stuff. I'm 6'5", I'm 280 pounds, and you're so unimpressed. You're laughing at me. That's great, tough guy. We're going to start the meeting. Why don't you take a seat? You know, but think of it this way. I'm at the low point of my existence. I burned every bridge. I've hurt everyone that had the misfortune of caring about me, and I somehow end up in AA. And in very short order, I meet this very strange, assorted group of new people, and they find out everything there is to know about me, good and bad. Yet they still love me and accept me and encourage me. Where are you going to find that kind of compassion, support, and love anywhere on the planet if you're an alcoholic? Only a magic place called Alcoholics Anonymous in my experience. And my journey began immediately. And sponsorship is so important to me because I don't know anything about AA. And it's a bizarre place. If we've been here a while, we forget what it was like to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And people are trying to be welcoming. They're trying to be helpful. And a lot of it feels repellent when you're new and it comes to you. Everybody's so happy in the teeth and the shaking the hands. And my life is hellish. And thank God I got a sponsor who wasn't Pollyannic. He didn't blow a bunch of steam up my rear end and go, there, alcoholic, you're home. It's going to all work out. He was the opposite. In AA, I found out the worse you are, the more we like you. I remember talking to my first sponsor and him finding out facts about my life. And I was watching his excitement level rise. He's like, oh, you're 31 years old and you live with your sister? Of course you do. You haven't worked in a year? That's terrific. You don't have a car? Who needs a car? You have warrants for your arrest in 2 counties? My God, you're an overachiever. You owe the IRS $80,000? That's wonderful. And I mean, I started to feel better about my wreckage. You know, And I know today what he was thinking, right? This is what he's thinking. Maybe he's had enough. Maybe he's got a little bit of open-mindedness. Maybe we can move the bricks out of the way just enough so he can start to take actions he doesn't yet believe in. Maybe he's not ready for a life in AA, but maybe he's convinced he doesn't want to go back to the grinder. Maybe that'll buy us some time. And the thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is my sponsor never tried to tell me it was going to be okay. You know, I tell him I cry and I complain about my life. It's so terrible and I'm hopelessly in debt. Nobody likes me and I don't have a car. I don't have a girlfriend. And he goes, no, Don, you're right. You're right. He goes, your life sucks. It's horrible. He goes, Don, I make a gratitude list every night. Since I met you, you're on it. Every night I write, dear God, thank you for not making me Don. And then he would laugh and laugh and laugh. He found out I owed the IRS $80,000. He didn't lie about that. He goes, that's a lot of money. You'll probably never get out of debt, but you'll be sober. But I'll tell you what, there's a propulsion system for untreated sober alcoholism or drunken alcoholism. America, you know, referred to it in the big book. It says, I'm driven, I'm pushed through life by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-delusion, and self-pity. Any one of those things can kill an alkie. You put them together, they're a deadly cocktail. We will not tolerate self-pity and Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, why is that? To the untrained eye, people that don't understand alcoholism, they'll think, well, that's mean. Where's your compassion? Listen, man, self-pity kills alkies, right? Poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. It's really not my fault. You don't understand. My case is different. My sponsor was not going to let me feel bad about my problems. And whatever you bring to AA, you find out everybody gets here with stuff. It's kind of comforting, isn't it? Because you think you're the one defective person, and then suddenly you're in a room of defects. You're like, cool, I'm home. I may be a mess, but so are you. There's a comfort in that. But whatever you bring here, we'll grab it, and we'll put it into service in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor found out I owed the IRS 80 grand. Oh, my God. For the next couple of years, so I got that debt taken care of. Any newcomer that had the misfortune of complaining to my sponsor about his little $1,000 IRS debt, He'd interrupt the guy. He goes, hold that thought, Jimmy. Hey, Don, you got a minute? And I'd walk over like a goob, and he'd go, "Don, tell Jimmy how much you owe the IRS." And I'd look at Jimmy, I'd go, "I owe the IRS $80,000. And Jimmy would go, "Jesus!" And Jimmy would feel better, and my sponsor would laugh, and I just want to be a servant. And I learned to laugh at my trouble in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor used to say, he goes, "Look, you're not just a member of AA, you're a representative. It's easy to look good around here, learn our language, and get our approval." He goes, "But you're only with us a short amount of time. You're out there in the world, and people don't know you're in AA, but they might find out. And if they find out, make us look good." Right? You want to know who I am? Go talk to my neighbors. Talk to the guys I work with. Talk to my employer. Talk to my wife. You'll find out what kind of an AA member I am. But my sponsor insisted that I become a member and a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's going to be a problem for me because I don't know how to do it. Because in AA, there's dog rules, right? There's the stuff in the book and there's service manual and there's tons of pamphlets. But there's a lot of unwritten rules in AA that are handed down from old timer to old timer to old timer for over 80 years that I wasn't aware of. And you need a sponsor to navigate those waters, to teach you how to act in AA. Because I didn't know how to act, man. I'm not house trained, right? And my sponsor, man, for my first 90 days in AA, he would just, almost every meeting I went to, at the end of the meeting, he'd give me that curly finger, "Come here, Don." And I'd think to myself, "Now what did I do wrong?" And then he would explain some grievous infraction I'd committed during a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. "Don, if you don't like what the speaker's saying, you can't go in the corner and do push-ups. Don, you can't get up and get coffee six times during the meeting and interrupt everybody. Don, if you don't like what an old-timer says to you, you can't threaten to snatch the life out of him and make amends later. Don." And it went on and on, because it's dog rules, right? It's dog rules. I got a dog. I got a dog, Bo the Wonder Dog, man. He's the apple of my eye, man. I love that dog. And he's smart as a whip. You spend 5 minutes with my dog and you'll go, "That's a remarkable dog you have there." But, like any dog, at one time he was a puppy, right? Didn't know any better. I remember we had Bo maybe 2 weeks. And I'd fallen in love with him. And I'm on the phone with a sponsee one day. And there goes Bo, a little puppy, walks into the living room. And I remember thinking, "There's Bo. He's so cute. I love him so much." And then he went into a crouch, right? And so I say into the phone to my sponsee, I go, "Oh, no." And he goes, "What's wrong?" I go, "Bo's taking a dump in the living room." He goes, "Well, do you need to go?" I go, "No, it's too late, man. You can't interrupt him. You'll traumatize the little guy. That's not how you potty train him, man. You got to kind of stalk him, you know. Keep an eye on him. And when they look like they're going to break bad, you got to scoop them up. And it will freak them out a little bit. They'll be like, "I'm in here, I'm in here, I'm in here." And you got to take them outside and you drop them on the lawn and you step back and you look at them and they'll look at you with all sincerity like, "What the hell was that about?" And then they'll go, "Oh, I'm outside. I guess I got to kind of poop." And if they do, you better throw a party. "Hello, boy. What a good boy. Who's a good boy?" And he'll get all excited. He'll be shaking his butt. And he'll go, "Oh, dude, I did not know. You want me to poop out here? Oh, I could totally do that. I love you, man." My sponsor did exactly the same thing with me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I came into AA and I crapped all over your meetings. I'm that guy. If I'm in the room, you know I'm there, right? I am the distraction. And my sponsor cared more about AA than he cared about my feelings. And that is the purest form of love that I've ever experienced. If somebody cared enough about me to risk my wrath, my disapproval, my crankiness, to say, "We don't do that here," and then tell me what we did instead. And coupled with that is he never missed an opportunity to say, "Good job." Never missed an opportunity to say, "I appreciate it." Never missed an opportunity to say, "Thank you." You see, my sponsor used the age-old spiritual principle of the invitation. You see, that's what we do in AA. We don't dominate. We don't order people around. We're shoulder to shoulder, right? No better, no less, same as. Moving as a unit. And my sponsor used this age-old invitation because he believed that people with Alcoholics Anonymous would rather see a sunset than listen to a sermon. So he'd roll up on me and he'd say, "Hey, Don, I got to set up this meeting early tomorrow night. I could really use your help. Can you show up early?" And I'd think, man, he could use my help. And I'd show up early, we'd set up some meeting, and then he'd shake my hand at the end of it. And he'd say, man, I really appreciate it. And I'd been some places, I had accomplished some things, and I don't know why that meant more to me than all of it. You know, he saw me. He included me. He invited me. You see, I thought I'd stayed in the water too long. Yeah, I had a shot at the good life once, but that's in the rearview mirror, man. Those days are in the past. It's never going to work out for a guy like me. And then you come to a magic place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they start inviting you. They invite you to the meetings. They invite you to get involved. They invite you to go to detox. They invite you to go to the treatment center. They invite you to go on 12-step calls. They invite you into their vibrant, exciting AA lives. They invite you into their homes. They invite you into their car. They invite you to the coffee shop, and you don't have any money. The waitress goes, what do you have? And you go, I'm not hungry. And you could hear your stomach growling. And somehow there's a plate of eggs and sausage in front of you that you don't know where it came from. And I go, who ordered this for me? And they go, I guess God did, newcomer. Eat it. And I go to AA at night, and you stuff my pockets full of love, and you stuff my pockets full of hope, and you stuff my pockets full of respect, and you treat me as an equal, and you tell me I'm part of the tribe, and you tell me I'm welcome. And if you're a guy that's hit your bottom, and you know it's never going to be okay, it conspires to leave you with a feeling that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the story's not over yet. Maybe there's a little life left in me yet. And what happens is you start to stand up a little straighter in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you start to have a little bounce in your step. And because it's a home group, and because of strong sponsorship, we do 12-step work. We exist outside of the normal meeting hours. And we hang out in that clubhouse after meetings, drinking coffee, telling those AA war stories. Kind of boring. Then the phone would ring, and it'd be a 12-step call. And these old men would light up like young warriors, and they'd argue about who was going to go. You went last time, I'm going this time. And they're ready to hit each other with their big books. And out into the night they would go. And they would take me with you. They would take me with them, and they'd say, newcomer, get in the car. I go, where are we going? You don't need to know that. What are we doing? You really don't need to know that. And another thing, you're here to watch. You're here to learn. For God's sakes, don't say anything. We don't want you killing anyone. And that's how I would learn to do 12-step work. Sitting at the feet of the masters on the hump in the back seat, why these men would go into these sordid neighborhoods, neighborhoods I knew better than to go into, neighborhoods I had just left when I was in my active alcoholism. And I think, you don't want to go there at 11:45 at night. And they didn't care. They were purposeful. And I watched these men walk into homes that had been devastated by alcoholism. The smell greets you at the door, dimly lit, crunchy carpet. You could feel death in the air. And I watched these men walk in with God in their big books, and I watched their hands reach into the abyss. I watched them grab a suffering alcoholic. I watched people come to AA. I watched them try AA, and I watched them get sober, and it blew my hair back. Because I'll tell you what, your own recovery will always impress you, and you'll always be grateful. It's nothing like watching it front row seat. To watch the hand of the Maker work through a group of alcoholics to save and change another life. And I watched that power that worked through these men, and I wanted more of it. I'm 6 months sober. I go on a 12-step call. I go with a guy who's got 6 months and another guy that's got 14 years. And who we're seeing that night is a guy named Donnie. And Donnie's drinking Jim Beam that night, telling us not to take his Jim Beam. And we informed Donnie, we don't do that, and besides, you called us. And the guy that was with us that had 6 months hit him with his 6 month stuff, which was great. I was really impressed. Then the guy with 14 years hit Donnie with his 14-year stuff, which was amazing. It blew the roof off. And then I hit him with my 6 month stuff, which at the time sounded like this. I'm 6 months sober, haven't had a drink in 6 months. I go to AA every night. I really can't say I'm happy. I live at my sister's house. I don't have a car. I have a job. I'm a laborer on a framing crew, and I'm so bad at it, my nickname on the job site is the Bleeder. I have a tyrannical figure in my life called a sponsor. I'm really sure we don't like each other. And I don't know if you want what I have and you're willing to go to any length to get it. And we leave that night, and Donnie's still drinking. And I'm thinking it's a failed 12-step call. You know, my sponsor had taught me, though. He goes, nah, if you leave sober, it's a successful 12-step call. And I go to the job the next day where I bleed all day, and I get home, and I'm going to go to two meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that night, and I get out of the shower, and the phone rings with my sister, and it's this guy, Donnie. And Donnie goes, "Hey, man, where's the meeting tonight?" I couldn't believe it. He was drunk as Cooter Brown the night before. So I'm giving him directions to the meeting, and I go, "Do you need us to pick you up?" And he goes, "Nah, man, I got a car." And I thought, damn, he's doing better than I am. And so now I got to rush down to the clubhouse because you got to cordially welcome the new man to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do that. I get him a half a cup of coffee. I'm introducing him around. We sit down and we're talking. And he goes, "Man, that stuff you said last night about sponsorship," which I didn't even remember saying, he said, "it made sense." He goes, "Would you be willing to sponsor me?" I said, "I'll get right back to you." And so I run off to find my sponsor. I go, "You know that 12-step call?" I go, he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "The guy's here." And he goes, "Oh, that's beautiful." He goes, "Yeah, he asked me to sponsor him." He goes, "Beautiful. What'd you say?" I go, "Tell him I'll get right back to him." He goes, "Let me get this straight. He's drunk last night?" I go, "Yeah." "And somehow he made it to Alcoholics Anonymous tonight?" I go, "Yeah. And he took whatever strength he had left and asked you for help?" "Yeah. And you said you'd get back to him?" "Yeah. Go say yes, you selfish bastard." And then he walked away. I hated this about my sponsor. He'd get the last word in, right? And then he'd walk away. I see his bald head going off in the distance. So I yell at his bald head. I go, "Dude, I'm 6 months sober. I haven't even finished my amends yet. I don't want to kill him. I don't know what I'm doing." He doesn't even turn around. He waves me off and he goes, "Ah, you got to kill a couple before you get the hang of it." And just keeps walking. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. AA, we care. No, we don't. But my sponsor knew the truth, right? You can't kill an alcoholic, please. What are we going to do to you? What you haven't done to yourself, man? We come in here with not one near-death experience. We sit there at coffee and out-top each other with near-death experiences. My God. So now I'm sponsoring a guy, and I'm thinking, what the hell? How am I going to help this guy? And I found out he didn't care that I lived at my sister's house. He didn't care I was hopelessly in debt. He didn't care I worked for minimum wage with taxes taken out. What he cared about is how the heck did a guy like me go 6 months without taking a drink? I mean, when Donnie got a year in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I asked him, I said, "Man, you could have asked anybody for help. Of all the people you could have asked, why would you ask me?" He goes, "Well, I heard your story." I go, "Yeah?" He goes, "Yeah, I figured if a loser like you could get sober, it'd be a snap for me." So you never know what kind of beneficial message you carry to the new man or woman. And Donnie's still sober today. He's got 6 months less than me. That's got nothing to do with me. It's because he's taking the actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started sponsoring people. So now I'm both sides of the coin, right? I'm actively being sponsored, and I'm sponsoring men. And I found out, man, that's the good stuff. That's the good stuff is when you work with others. And you know why? Because of this. Because my alcoholism resides mainly in my mind, and I think about myself all the time. I woke up today, guess what? Thinking about me. I'll wake up tomorrow thinking about me. Why do you think the directions in the big book in the 11th step, what's the first direction upon awakening? We ask God to direct our thinking. How did he know that I was going to be waking up thinking about myself every day? Because we all wake up. And the beautiful thing about sponsoring each other, it's like these non-scheduled interruptions on a regular basis into my constant thought of self. These self-centered alcoholics wedge themselves into my constant thought of self and create mini vacations from me. And I always feel better. Here's my favorite story about why we sponsor people. I was 10 years sober. I got really sick. I didn't get sick for a week or a month. I got sick for a year. Right? And at the end of the year, I'm really losing hope. I'm tired of being the sick guy. You know what I mean? And I'm still going to AA all the time, and I'm going to work, and I'm doing the best I can with it, but my spirit is really getting broken. And they put me on this experimental medication, and they go, "Listen, this is either going to work like a charm, or you're going to have horrible side effects." So Monday morning, I take the experimental medication as prescribed, and I have the horrible side effects, right? I make it to maybe 20 minutes of work. And I find myself at home, alone, in the bed, fetal position, right, in the worst pain I've ever been in my life. I mean, I'm bursting out in sweat. I'm so hot. And then I'm so cold, I got a parka on. My joints are killing me. And I mean, the self-pity, you know what I mean? It's just dripping down the walls, you know? And I am pissed at God. I am so, God is a million miles away. And I'm thinking to myself, I've done everything AA's asked me to do. And this is my reward. I'm not supposed to be sick. And I'm just having this huge pity party for myself. And the phone rings. And I look over, it's a guy I sponsor. And I think, oh no, not now. Not now. But I got good training in Alcoholics Anonymous. He'd take the call. I pick it up and I say, how's it going, buddy? And he asked me, he goes, how you feeling, Sponce? Because everybody knows I'm sick by this time. And usually I lie in a situation like that, I'll be honest with you. I say, I'm having a tough day with God and AA, I'll be okay. How are you? And I redirect the conversation. But for whatever reason that morning, man, I let it fly. How am I feeling? Let me tell you how I'm feeling. You know what? I'm in the worst pain I've ever been in my life. This medication they gave me, I feel like it's going to kill me. And guess what? I don't want to die. And you know what? My wife, she's going to get tired of being married to the sick guy. So that's not going great. And you know what? I feel like God deserted me. And I'm so pissed off at God. We're not on speaking terms right now. And I hate how sorry I feel for myself. The self-pity's dripping down the wall. And I don't see any way out. And my life wasn't supposed to turn out this way. You want to know how I'm doing? That's how I'm doing. Dead quiet. For a couple of seconds. Then he says this. Oh my God, Sponce. I am so sorry. But listen, I met this girl. I had to cover the phone. I was laughing so hard. The perfect, precise, selfish, self-centered of the newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so wonderful. It's so perfect. Baby bird, baby bird. Feed me, feed me. I mean, I had a heart attack 4 years ago. Nobody called up to say, oh my God, are you okay? They said, you cannot die. I need you. And they meant it that way. I have invested way too much time. You know way too much about me. I don't feel like training another sponsor. You can't die. Thank you for your loving concern. I've actively been sponsored since my second night in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sponsoring men since I was 6 months sober. And there's a thousand things that we have the opportunity, the honor and privilege of doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We all have those opportunities. And they're all important. And they're all necessary. And they all carry weight and depth. But if I had to pick one thing that's probably served me the best, it's sponsoring other people. Because it's inconvenient. And it turns out that inconvenience, the thing I would call inconvenient, turns out it is not inconvenient. It's probably the thing that does the best for me in every area of my life. It stretches me. It makes me stronger. You know, it's interesting about having an active life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you about my life. I'm married for 25 years to the beautiful Eileen. We have a sober home. I work for a living. I have outside interests. You know, I'm not a guy that goes to AA every night and hangs out in AA. I got a big, big life. I do 100 things a day that I was not capable of doing when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Having said that, there have been many times in my sobriety where I've looked in the rearview mirror and I've looked at what I've done in the previous 6 months and I go, nobody can keep that pace up. Nobody can do that. And I'll look ahead the 6 months on what I have scheduled and I go, nobody can do that. That's insane. What am I doing? But here's the truth. In the moment, it's always manageable. Now, why is that? Why are we always okay right here and right now? Could it be that that turns out to be the only place we can meet God? I can't meet him yesterday and I can't meet him tomorrow, but here right now in this moment, I'm with God. Is that why when I'm with you, is that why when I'm at work, when I think I can't take it another minute, I find out I'm wrong? I can, because in that moment, I am not alone. And you see, you taught me that, the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm never alone anymore. That I have just gained access to a power greater than myself that it will achieve the miraculous for me. And here's the miraculous for me. It's not that I'm wildly successful or I've made a lot of money or I've got big degree. It's none of that outside stuff that maybe people outside that don't understand alcoholism would be impressed with. The miraculous things that have come to pass in my life are this and nothing less. I don't run, I don't quit, and I don't drink. Think about that. That is what my whole life was based on before Alcoholics Anonymous. I run, I quit, and I drink, and it never happens anymore. You've done something to me. And what you did is you took me through a process of the 12 steps with a sponsor, and it changed my life. I got the big payoff at the end. I got a spiritual awakening, which meant I'm awake to what? That there's a power that runs this thing and it's available to me right now. I didn't know that. Then you told me my next thing that I had to do. Don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep. What's the best way to stay awake in Alcoholics Anonymous? Hang out with you. Because you remind me of things that seemingly I forget from one meeting to the next. I mean, I've been here a long time. America's been here a long time. I didn't hear it say anything that I hadn't heard before in some form or fashion of the book, but it all felt new tonight. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I'm like nodding my head like a bobble doll in a 67 Chevrolet. You know, I get it. Because here's the deal. I've been sober a long time. I've had the honor and privilege of doing a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? But here's the one thing I've never figured out how to do. I can't carry the message to myself. I need you to do that for me. Because if I could carry the message to myself, I guess I'd be home. Carrying the message to myself. But I come here with you and you bring it on to me all the time. So membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, what does that look like? You see, I want to tell you what I'm doing today. Like right now, currently in my sobriety. And why is that? Because I don't want to be a used to. I don't want to be a guy that can tell you what I used to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. How I used to do committee work. How I used to sponsor people. How I used to have commitments in my home group. How I used to have a home group. I don't want to be that guy. And there's a reason I don't want to be that guy. Because we don't always get drunk. Sometimes we stay sober and we just get dry. And we get brittle. And our thinking reverts back to the old thing. And we're not happy, joyous, and free. We're irritable, restless, and discontent. And I have men call me on a regular basis with 25 plus years of sobriety going, I don't know what it is, Donnie. I'm kind of a mess. What's going on? Can't put my finger on it. Money's good. Marriage is good. Business good. Health good. Any better, I'd go in the backyard and hang myself. And so I ask them questions. I go, well, tell me about your home group. My what? Your home group. Well, you know, I'm currently between home groups. Now, most of my sobriety, I've had a home group, but currently I don't have one. I'm shopping for a home group, and I'm thinking, is that on Amazon? What do you mean you're shopping for a home group? But I don't say anything. I go, that's okay. All right. Well, tell me about the people you're working with. I mean, who are you taking through the book? Well, you know, I've taken a ton of guys through the steps. Boy, I know that book inside and out. But currently, right now, I'm not actually working with anybody at the moment. Oh, that's okay. That's all right. All right. Well, tell me what your prayer and meditation looks like. My what? Your prayer and meditation, your routine, what does that look like? I mean, what's your nightly review look like? What do you do in the morning? What do you do with your 10-stepping? What does that look like? And they go, well, you know, to be honest with you, I'm really not doing much in that way right now. And I go, well, I think I've narrowed down what your problem might be. And I go, what's that? And they're really interested because they don't know. I go, you're not doing anything. And here's the funny thing about sobriety. We get lulled into a sense of complacency where I forget the warnings associated with the first step that a long period of sobriety does not ensure me immunity from drinking. And just because I'm physically sober doesn't mean that I don't suffer from alcoholism. And here's the problem with having time and having untreated alcoholism. You go to your sponsor, you go, I'm crazy. Your sponsor goes, well, you need to write an inventory. You need to pick up some new sponsees. You need to double your meetings. You need to pick up a service commitment. And you go, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. Our time makes us think we know things that aren't true. So what does being a member look like for me today? I have a home group. It's the SOS Men's Group. We meet on Monday and Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock at St. James Church on 14th Street in the Fairhaven District of Bellingham, Washington. It's a men's group where men are men and the mental illness is not measurable. We are off the charts in that group. And that is the place that I lay a line in the sand and I make a stand for my life with these men on a regular basis and have for over 15 years in Bellingham, Washington. I have commitments in that group. I am the church liaison from that group. I am active in the service structure through that group. I sponsor men in that group that sponsor men in that group. I show up a half an hour early and I stay till the last dog is hung in that group. If something needs to be done in that group, I say yes. And let me tell you about our little group. And I've got about 12 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about what my home group looks like and what the genesis of my home group. It was not a group when we started. It was a meeting. And there's nothing wrong with being a meeting. We didn't have enough people that were willing to commit to the group so we could fulfill our obligation to the various arms of the service structure. We couldn't have a GSR, we couldn't have a literature rep, we couldn't have a public information rep, we couldn't have a cooperation with the professional community rep. We didn't have enough bodies. But over time, this little group, more guys started planting their flag there. And more guys started talking about being a group. And more guys started talking about being willing to become a group and take on what that entails in terms of responsibility to AA as a whole, to be connected in our district, in our area, in AA World Services. And so we became a group and we got registered. And that was over 12 years ago. And now we have elections every 6 months and every year and every 2 years, depending on the commitments. And several men stand up for every position. Guys are raised in a culture of service. They don't look at it as a punishment. We have a business meeting every month. When we announce our business meeting, men applaud and they hoop and they holler. They don't go, ugh. They're excited there's a business meeting. Here's a good way to tell if your home group is healthy. We average about 60 guys every Wednesday night at my home group. We have about 45 guys at our business meeting. If you have a high ratio of attendance to people actually show up, it's a good indication that you're doing something right. Because what that tells you is the people attending the meeting have taken ownership of the group on an individual basis. So now that these men have taken an ownership of the group, things start to happen. We start to do workshops. We start to do committee work. Gratitude banquet, Mount Baker roundup, New Year's Eve dances. Guy came to me in a group. He had about a year of sobriety. He goes, I got an idea. And I go, I bet you do. He said, you know what I'd like to do? And I said, what? He goes, I'd like to have like a pancake breakfast speaker meeting, like, you know, where we could invite the whole district and make pancakes. Because I like speakers and I like pancakes. And he said, but I don't know how to do it. And when I was a year sober, I didn't either. But I got to sit at the feet of the masters and do committee work with people that had been doing it for 20, 30 years when I started doing it. And I learned how to do certain things. I said, I'll tell you what. I go, I'll help you. I know how to do this. I know how to set it up. I know how to write a format. I know how to find us a place. I know how to do the treasury. I know how to recruit people, put a committee together. I know all of that. I only ask one thing. He goes, what's that? I go, you got to let me name it. And he goes, okay, you can name the event. I said, okay. And we had our first annual Shivering Denizens of His Mad Realm speaker meeting and pancake breakfast. And we've had a couple of them, man, and the district shows up and people eat pancakes and we had good speakers and we had a lot of fun. And what we're doing, it's not about having a pancake breakfast or a speaker meeting. It's about common bonding experiences. You see, every time I do something with you, it knocks down my uniqueness and it bonds me to you. See, I walk into my home group and I scan the room and I look at the faces of these men and I have history with them. They are my family, not of origin, but they are my family. But you don't get that. Certain things don't happen without somebody caring. And so what these men are raised in a culture is that they're important. Yearly inventory, where we take the inventory of the group. We're more interested in new men that have come to the group that year. What's your experience when you come to our group? Are you made to feel welcome? Are you made to feel important? Are you included in our activities? Do you feel that we have inclusivity? Do you feel we're too cliquish? And you don't want to hear the answers sometimes about that stuff. Because I get shielded. And the other thing I have to do at 30 years is it's weird. I have to move back into the shadows. And you know why? Because I know stuff. And it's so dangerous in Alcoholics Anonymous, that line between elder spokesman and bleeding deacon is so thin that I'll sit in my business meetings and I just want to dominate. They come up with these ideas and I go, we talked about this 8 years ago. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. And I just have to shut up and realize that sometimes making a mistake in AA is their path to experience, that they need to be able to make decisions, even if I don't agree with them. And so I've done that in my home group, tried to navigate that thing where I'm responsible, I'm showing up, but I'm not dominating. And it's hard for me because I'm dominant. You know, my ego tells me that I know stuff. And so we're connected. We're connected with this thing. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you the most recent story about my home group that I love so much and why I just love being with these guys. So 5 years ago, these two newcomers washed up on the shores of Alcoholics Anonymous in my home group, named Ben and Matt. And Ben and Matt, hey, all newcomers are interesting. These guys were off the charts, right? They had all the problems that you would want newcomers to have, and they lived together. You know what I mean? And they're bored. They're going to two AA meetings every day of the week. And, you know, they're running around. And if you saw Ben, you saw Matt. If you saw Matt, you saw Ben. They're just running around like this pair of rabid dogs. And these guys are so nuts and so bored that they're trying to figure out things. I mean, they're playing lawn darts in the dark. You know, they think that stuff's fun. And then one of them got a hold of a tattoo gun, right? And neither one of them are artists, and neither one of them are tattoo artists. And they start showing up at the meeting. They're showing each other, the guys, their new tattoos they're giving each other. You guys are giving each other tattoos at night?
Yep. Just trying to stay out of our heads. Stay busy, you know.
And these are not good tattoos. These are not even prison quality tattoos, you know. They're getting tattoos. They're giving each other like matching dumpster fire tattoos. I mean, it's just. And they make it, and they're about a year sober, and they're doing well, man. They're doing well. They're a year sober. They've been through their steps. Their lives are slowly coming together. They're active in the home group, but they're still nuts. And, you know, by this time, they're part of the family. They're part of me. And we're standing around after a meeting one night, and I'm with Ben and Matt, and we're having that snappy repartee where, you know, these young guys are trying to kick my feet out from underneath me because I'm the old guy. They're saying spiritual things like, I think we all know your best days are behind you, Don. You know what I mean? And I'm giving them stuff back, and we're giving each other a hard time. But I'm saying spiritual stuff like, if I had a buck for every smart-ass newcomer I saw that didn't make this program making fun of old-timers, I wouldn't have to go to work tomorrow. And we're laughing and giving it back to each other. And I have this whole stream of consciousness where I'm just giving them a hard time. And part of that stream of consciousness just popped out of my mouth. I really didn't think about it. I said, the way you guys are going, if you keep on this trajectory with this kind of ego, you're not going to make it. I go, you're not going to make it anything like 5 years. We see lots of one-year cakes. We don't see a lot of five-year cakes. I'm so convinced that if you keep this stuff up, you're not going to make it. You get 5 years, you can give me a tattoo. And it just came out of my mouth. I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't mean it. And like Matt's whole face changed. And he looked at Ben, and Ben was all excited. And, you know, I've been sober a while. I was 25 years sober at that time. So I intuitively know, I think I just made a mistake. But we don't really say much more about it that time, and months go by. And I think, oh, they're probably going to forget. And then they got 2 years in the program, you know. And, I mean, immediately after celebrating their time, they both rolled up at me and they said, 3 years to go, you know. And this went on every year. And I was, like, trying to be cool, like, oh, you know, I was kidding, guys. I go, oh, no. No, well, we don't keep our word in AA. Is that what you're telling us, old timer? And I'm long story short, September 16th, I turned 30 years sober. About 2 weeks after that, Ben and Matt turned 5 years sober. In October, the guys in my group threw a big 30-year party for me at one of my sponsees' houses. So we were all there, and there was going to be hamburgers and hot dogs and cake and apparently a tattoo I didn't know about because they showed up with the tattoo kit. And as they videotaped it, Matt with his shaky hands, and I picked the spot on my leg that I thought wouldn't hurt the most. I don't have any tattoos. I'm not a tattoo guy, all right? Tattooed my wife's initial with which was supposed to be a heart around it. I don't know what it is exactly. It looks like a broken shield, but he did it. And they did stop the bleeding. I want to be clear on that. And that's not the worst part of the story. Everybody's hooting and hollering and having a great time with this at my expense. And I'm having a great time. And it's just goofy. And I'm thinking about how much I love these guys and how unified we are. And we get done, and Ben comes over, and he's really looking at the tattoo hard, and he goes, that's pretty good. He did a pretty good job. He goes, it's not as good as mine, though. And I go, what are you talking about? And he's wearing shorts, and he pulls up his shorts, and on the top of his thigh, big as can be, are my wife's initial tattooed on his leg with a big heart around it. And I go, oh, my God, Ben, why would you get my wife's initials tattooed on your leg? He doesn't miss a beat. He goes, well, he needed to practice. My second night of recovery, I got a sponsor who was an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I told you all the things I received without knowing I received them. I received a home group. I received commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I received the gift of sponsorship. I received all the friendship, all the love, all the support that comes to the home group. I received all those things. It's funny, 30 years later, if you ask me what I'm excited about, I'll tell you this. I got a home group. It's the SOS men's group. It's where I draw a line in the sand with a group of men and make a stand for my life every week. I got a sponsor. His name's Vin K. He's 41 years sober, and I want to assure you he's completely unimpressed with me. My prayer for you is your sponsor is unimpressed with you. I have commitments in that home group that serve me well. It's my honor and privilege to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. All this, everything that I have in my life, I'm excited about. All the things I count on from Alcoholics Anonymous to keep this alcoholic sober, everything was given to me my second night of recovery. It's interesting, isn't it? What a simple program we have. You know, it's often said that in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's monkey see, monkey do. But I will tell you this, you got to pick the right monkeys, and I hope you do. I hope we stay sober forever. Thanks for listening.